discussion with Jim Gower from the Institute of Ocean Sciences. Good evening, Jim. Welcome to the Space Show.
Thank you. It's nice to be here.
The Americans put up a satellite some years ago called CSAT. What was it about, and what eventually happened to it?
Now, this was the really dramatic step that America took to demonstrate what satellites could do for oceanographers. And they put all the interesting things, as it seemed to us at the time, onto the one satellite and launched it. And it really was pretty neat. In fact, we're still going through the data that came off that satellite for the brief time it lasted, which is the rest of the story, I guess, working out what it all meant and seeing how we could improve on it.
This satellite was quite a big one for its day. Why was it so big?
Well, as I said, it was largely because they wanted to put a number of sensors on it. Maybe one main point was because they had this so-called synthetic aperture radar on board, and radars tend to take up space. Partly they need to have a fairly large antenna to send their signal out, and partly they are very power hungry, and so they need big solar panels. So really a radar satellite tends to be a sort of flying solar power station coupled to a flying transmitter facility, like a big antenna with a big power station tied to its back, circling around the Earth.
Now, most people, of course, would have either seen radar or seen it in the movies, and you get a little circular screen that people peer out, and a little arm goes round and round, and you get this bloop, bloop, bloop sort of effect.
That's right.
Now, you sometimes see at the airports these things going round and round and round. Now, on a satellite, of course, that sort of technology wouldn't be appropriate, so I believe CSAT used a different method of scanning the ground.
Right. CSAT used what they call side-looking radar, where basically the satellite moves forward and that scans the ground for you, so you don't have to worry about rotating anything round. You just keep looking out sideways, and a big swath of imagery gets illuminated, as we say, by the radar signal, and imaged. And thanks to this synthetic aperture technique, which is one of the really neat new ideas since the war, I guess, of how you could use radar, one gets a picture which is so stunningly sharp that it's quite common that people don't realize they're looking at a radar image. I mean, it tends to be black and white because most of the images we have so far are just one frequency band, one type of radar. But they're so sharp, they're just beautiful images. They just look like a picture.
Yeah, they look like photographs, don't they?
Look like a photograph, yes.
And what do we find out from this? I mean, why would we want to just scan across the Earth and the oceans? I mean,
right.
What on earth can you see in the oceans using a radar, for heaven's sakes?
Well, come on. That's what... every ship that goes out there has a radar on board. They know what they're going to see.
But they're looking for ships.
Well, sometimes we're looking for ships. That was one of the really interesting bits of work that came out of the CSAT. Now, CSAT, as I hinted earlier, didn't last nearly as long as we'd hoped. In fact, it crashed. Its equipment failed rather permanently and dramatically after roughly 100 days. So we talk about the 100 days of CSAT in hushed awe still. But in that time, it collected enough pictures that people who want to know how to follow ships from space got a lot of nice images to look for ships on. And there's some beautiful examples of ships which you see either because you can see the ship itself as a bright spot or because the ship tends to leave a wake line, and on a radar, wake lines show up so incredibly beautifully. There are cases where you could see the wake line for hundreds of kilometers behind a ship. And in some cases, which are sort of more interesting and maybe more shameful, we feel that one of the reasons those wake lines show up so well is because the ship was quietly dumping oil, pumping its bilges as it went along, and leaving a streak across the ocean. Which, if they could see these radar images, they might be more careful. I mean, not because it's bad to make streaks on radar images particularly, but you are very obvious if you're caught with one of these radars leaving a streak.
So a radar satellite could actually be used to check on illegal oil dumping and stuff?
Oh, that's right. And there are examples where people have done this. I mean, there are cases where the streak is there behind the ship. They can talk to the local port authority about what was that ship that just left, and here's the picture of it leaving a streak. And basically it comes down to the fact that there's often few regulations to haul somebody before the court.
So how come the oil streak shows up on the radar image? I mean, surely oil doesn't reflect radar.
Well, but oil, as is well known, calms troubled waters. Uh-huh. And that's what happened. What the radar responds to is the roughness of the water. It's basically a roughness measurer. And something like oil on the water calms it, leaves a flat, calm slick just behind, well, behind the ship in this case. And one sees this long, flat line.
Uh-huh. And what else? Okay, the satellite wasn't put up just to look for oil slicks. What was the main purpose for putting up CSAT?
Okay, what it was put up for in that case was to be an ocean roughness mapper and look at the things we felt fairly sure you would get out from roughness variations. And one of the important things we knew you would get is that if you have enough spatial resolution, you can see the roughness changes that are implied by surface waves. And I shouldn't really just talk about roughness there. Let's say the brightness to the radar due to surface waves. And the brightness changes come apart partly because the tops of waves are actually rougher than the bottoms of waves, which is an observation people have been able to make from various ships and towers and so on. And partly because when you're looking out sideways with a radar, as you can imagine, you'd expect probably to get more signal back from the front of the wave, where the wave's tipped up, to tend to reflect radar back to you, than from the back of the wave. Then there are all sorts of very interesting and complicated phenomena which come about because of this so-called synthetic aperture technique, which basically maps Doppler shifts of targets on the sea. And waves have the most extraordinary Doppler shifts. Well, it's not the... let's call it wave speed, because it really does get quite complicated.
Yes.
It's the speed at which the little capillary waves, which resonate with the radar that you're sending down, the speed at which they're moved over the surface by the circulation of the waves. So it's the speed a kayaker feels, more than the speed at which a wave, you know, which seems to go roaring past you if you're... if you're on a fixed tower or something, watching the sea going past.
Okay. Well, given that the waves are made by wind, does this tell you anything about the wind speed over the ocean, if you can measure the size and speed of the waves?
Yes. That would, in a sense, be going backwards, I guess. People who measure waves tend to be interested in the waves per se. There are other instruments which measure the wind speed from a satellite. So if you just want the wind speed, you probably don't go to the trouble of putting up an imaging radar. Partly because what an imaging radar does, to make a picture, it just looks out in one direction. And if you look in one direction, you'll see the roughness of the water caused by wind. But if the wind was blowing from another direction, you might see effectively a different roughness, because it does matter which way the wind is blowing. And to answer that problem, we actually have instruments called scatterometers, and there was one on CSAT, and there hasn't been one for a long time since, but there's now one on ERS-1, the next satellite. And the scatterometer actually looks out, not exactly sideways, it looks out sort of forwards of sideways and measures how rough the ocean appears in that direction, and then it looks out backwards of sideways and checks how rough it is in that direction. And then if you imagine the satellite moving forwards, it sees a point on the surface, on that particular side anyway, it sees it, first looking forwards at it, and then after it's passed looking backwards at it. And you can put those two measurements of roughness together to estimate both the speed and the direction of the wind.
I mention that because I've seen photographs, or rather data, maps prepared from the CSAT data, which show the wind speeds in different parts of the world.
Yeah.
And that was pretty amazing.
You know, that's exactly the kind of thing they're working on with that.
If you
read the literature, in fact, anybody, I guess, could do this, if you sort of sit and think with your eyes closed, suppose the surface, the roughness of the sea, changes with the direction the wind is blowing. If you look out at it, you know, straight ahead of you, you look out at the sea, if the wind's blowing from the side, it actually doesn't appear as rough to the radar as if you were looking straight upwind direction. If the wind was blowing straight towards you and you look with a radar there, well, you can imagine the little wavelets are all sort of falling over themselves towards you, and you get steep edges, you get more reflection. Sideways, you're seeing these steep edges, the scattering doesn't come back to you, it maybe goes off sideways. So the radar picture's less bright. and if the wind's blowing from you to the water, it turns out it's actually fairly rough that direction as well, but not as rough as when you're looking upwind. And if you start putting all that together with the geometry of a scatterometer, where you look halfway ahead of you and then halfway behind you, it turns out you get what are called, well, ambiguities are what you get. You can't really tell. You have a measurement that depends on wind direction, but it doesn't tell you quite whether the wind's coming from just one direction. It always leaves you with at least two directions you don't know, and it tends to leave you with three possibilities and sometimes even with four. And depending on what map you were looking at, some of the early ones have what were called chicken feet all over them. You know, if you look at a chicken's footprint, it tends to have three claws, is it? Who knows how many claws the chicken have? I think, right, let's assume this for the purpose of your show. 3 feet out forwards and have one out back as well?
Yes,
because they perch, don't they? Right.
Yes.
We've got to be able to say that. Yes. So chicken feet have these sort of three rather randomly directed, you might say, directions. And the early CSAT data had always chicken feet. At each point, they would say, well, the wind was blowing in one of these four directions. And there was a lot of heavy thinking went into how you could remove the ambiguity, it was called. Ambiguity removal. There were conference sessions on ambiguity removal. Mm. I mean, in life, it's one of the complicated things to do. Ambiguity removal is something we all need for all sorts of purposes.
So the satellite could give us some idea of the wind speed, but it couldn't tell us absolutely what the wind was then.
Well, what it turns out is that because it's what you call an ambiguity, it's not an error, you see.
Yes.
It's a possibility that it's in one of four directions. What it turns out is that now that we've got these global models running, we know fairly well which way the wind is blowing everywhere on the ocean. So once the satellite says it is exactly either there, 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 or there, and you put it together with a model, you instantly say, oh, well, it must be there then, because the other three directions don't make any sense at all. And it turns out that if you combine a model with the satellite data, the ambiguities in most cases disappear, and you get these lovely maps of the ocean where the eddies, you know, the cyclones and the anticyclones, there they all are with the little arrows circling around, and where a satellite goes across, it sort of lays down a map for you of all these wind speeds, which is really quite dramatic. I mean, up in our part of the world, in the northern hemisphere, people say, well, in fact, there's enough ship traffic up there that we knew a lot about the wind speeds. But it's the southern oceans people talk about that makes such a difference, where it makes such a difference. Wind mapping of weather patterns, wind patterns in the southern ocean, turns out to be the interesting topic.
Right.
And if somebody wants to demonstrate the value of satellite data in this regard, they tend to come to the Australian area and pick an example from down there and say, this is what the Australians thought the wind was doing, but
this is what it actually
was doing. That's right.
Right.
And then you can get some very beautiful examples of total difference.
Mm. Oh, well, thanks for joining us tonight on the Space Show, Jim, and I hope you enjoy the rest of your stay here in Australia.
Thank you very much. I'm sure I will.